All right. Hello, coffee makers, not coffee takers. I am Dr. Joseph J. Burt Miller, Jr., and Afrezzo Nash and I are your hosts of the Cyber Coffee Hour. Two Mount Vernon products, bringing you our extensive experiences and experiences and stories of our amazing guests. We aim to share knowledge, elevate understanding, and foster a sense of belonging in this vast cyberspace. So for today's show, we're going to discuss AI regulatory leadership in the United States and what that should look like. To help break this all down is cloud consultant and certified educator Kevin Tuway. Now, Kevin Tuway is an Africa Leadership Accelerator Gold Fellow, cloud consultant, and certified educator with 7 years of experience. With experience as a cloud consultant, Kevin assists in migrating on-premise workloads to the cloud. He's passionate about data, AI, and blockchain. He also specializes in training on industry certifications from major technology providers and excels in co-creation, data analytics, user experience, and problem solving. Kevin is on a career mission to grow into technical program, project management, and use these skills to lead 500 successful projects targeting the sustainability development goals on education and gender equality. Kevin Tuway, welcome to the Cyber Coffee Hour.
Thank you so much, Doc. It's an honor to be here.
Doing,
thank
sir?
You for having me. I'm doing good. It's an awesome evening here. I'm currently in Nairobi, and it's awesome.
Yeah, man. And you know, maybe share with the, you know, kind of paint the picture for our listeners. Yeah, so I'm out here in the States, you know, in the DMV area. But you're out. You said it's like it's nighttime up where you're at, right?
Yeah, sure. It's currently around 7 past the evening hour. It's in Nairobi here in Kenya. It's like a chilly evening. Yes, it's been awesome because today I've been having an awesome day organizing our AWS community day, which is a huge success. So happy to be here to just talk with you about the regulatory frameworks around AI and basically my cloud and cybersecurity journey. Yes.
No, awesome, man. And you know, maybe little to that our listeners may know that, you know, we've actually did some work together in the past. You know, you had brought me on to speak with your university, and I thought that was a great experience. Maybe you want to talk just a little bit about that and how that program is going?
Yeah, maybe I can track it back on how we actually met on ISACA Engage, and I just saw you. You had recently gotten your PhD in cybersecurity, and you're there just looking for connections. And I said, this guy is the guy I want to connect with, and I'd like to know about it. And I think from there on, we formed this kind of a relationship. Just gelled into it. So when I invited you to speak on your cybersecurity journey and what it takes to grow into cybersecurity, I think that back then you are an assistant project manager at the Department of Homeland Security. So it was a really enthralling and intriguing experience. Yeah, I loved it. And the good thing about that is you're able to connect across different time zones and make things happen. Not just for one session, but you also came for another session, to like 2-3 sessions. So yes, that was amazing.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it was cool, man. I was definitely grateful for that, for the invite, and even to ask me to you know, participate. I thought that was cool, and I definitely appreciate it. So, and we've kept that connection ever since. So, so this episode means a lot. I'm glad that you're here, that you're able to make it through. And so let's get right into it. So as we mentioned, the article that we're going to discuss today is titled Advancing U.S. Regulatory Leadership for AI in 2024. The author of this article is David Zapolowski. It's an Amazon article dated back on 6 February 2024. So I'll start this off with a quick excerpt from the article. So the U.S. has long been home to some of the most innovative companies in the world. With artificial intelligence driving the next innovation boom, we have an opportunity as a nation to maintain this leadership position by harmonizing the responsible deployment of AI with a regulatory approach that allows AI innovation to thrive. If we don't strike this balance thoughtfully, America's position as a global leader in technology and innovation could substantially erode. So before we go a little further, and Kevin, what I love to have, as we have you on here today, I'd love for you to just, I want to hear your thoughts, but also inject your perspective as what you see out there in Kenya. And just like I said, just your perspective. But what are first thoughts that come to mind so far?
Sure. So really, because AI is a big thing and it cuts across from the time when in November 2021, when we had ChatGPT fully launched and it had like millions of users in a matter of weeks. Right. So from there on, there've been a lot of different innovations in different spaces regarding AI. And what is happening is most nations, including America and even these different states within America, are scrambling to get regulations to regulate AI and to put some frameworks and some of the guiding policies on how you can adopt AI for organizations. And that means a lot because it means a lot for innovation. And this is something that I believe is very important, an important discussion, because when I was looking at that article, there's like regulation is mentioned around 10 times in just one article, as well as a similar number on innovation. So that means that there's this thing about what is the impact of the regulation on innovation and what does it really mean when it comes to having that harmony in terms of the adoption of the regulations across not just America, but also different countries, including Africa. Because in Africa and most probably in Kenya, we can see that the innovation level is at the level of maybe America, where there's a lot of different models coming up. The other day we saw Sora from OpenAI. We're now seeing Anthropic come with Cloud Opus. And the thing is that AWS is also at the center of it all. So what does this really mean? Do we just remain in Africa as users and just remain and wait for like frameworks, regulatory frameworks coming in from the different countries like Europe and the States? Or do we also drive that conversation, which is very important?
No, absolutely. And I take this as when we're looking at AI, and of course, there's so many, and I would say as we're still learning more about AI and everyone that is, because I think there's a lot of fear that comes with the unknown. You know, some people fear that it's going to take away their jobs and we're seeing more implementation or AI implementation into like the everyday things that we do. I think, I don't know if you recall, but there was an issue, and I'm sure it's still ongoing, but initially there's reports about, you know, AI kind of plagiarizing artwork because, you know, someone would try to use AI images or images of well-known people and selling those images. But and artists are like, hold on, you didn't get, you know, the right permission and, you know, things like that to even do that. So it has caused disruption within, I say, you know, not just the art industry, but multiple industries as AI continues to infiltrate into different spaces, as you just said. So, so when looking at this article, so the author, he emphasized so a need for like a comprehensive U.S. AI vision, so that's going to balance both innovation with safety and responsibility. Because I think, you know, the main thing, you don't want AI can be a great tool. I don't want to give this notion that AI is just going to be all bad. It does have good if it's being used responsibly. If it's used the right way, the proper guardrails are put in place. And I think this is what this article is really trying to emphasize. And really to tell a tale that, hey, as AI continues to expand, we need to make sure we keep it in check. So it calls for policies that promote competition while ensuring that, you know, AI technologies are developed and utilized in a manner that, you know, is going to safeguard against different potential risks, you know, whether to potential risks to like individuals' health, you know, safety, and even civil rights. I say the primary goal that I pulled from this article was that it highlighted the vision to foster and ensure safe and responsible innovation in AI. And again, Kevin, as we talk about, you know, the use of AI and as it continues to grow and then I'll say mature, I should say, we do have to make sure it is being used responsibly because, yeah, I mean, let's face it, it can be used if it's put in the wrong hands, someone with, you know, malintent, you know, they could use it to, like I said, to cause real harm. And, but yeah, but and I'll shoot that to you. Yeah. Like, so when you hear this, yeah, absolutely. So what are the things that you see, or maybe your concerns when it comes to AI if it's not being used in the right way?
Yeah, thank you so much, Doc. You know, there's a lot of concern, and I totally relate to the concerns about AI taking jobs. It's a critical concern, but one of my greatest concerns about that, because we're going to talk about that later on about jobs, is the fact that AI is now permeating into phones, into our everyday devices. It's no longer something that you just think about as you're going to access it on a browser somewhere. So you're having even manufacturers of even cars trying to leverage AI. There is also robotics, there is humanoids. I saw that at NVIDIA GTC. They announced about all these different capabilities, GPUs that are capable of helping large language models to be trained. So that means that the future of AI is right on the infrastructure side. So that means that AI will no longer be something that we're thinking about as something we reach out to. It will become ubiquitous. It's going to be everywhere. It's going to be in each and every aspect of our lives. So what does that mean for us? It means that we just need to look at those guardrails, as you mentioned. Are we able to talk about the responsible AI aspect? We've seen different manufacturers in the bid to outwit their competition. They release AI products without putting the proper safeguards. Then when it gets out to users, it creates a lot of commotion. For example, I think there was a Twitter AI bot that was released. Then it had all these racist remarks and also some preconceived notions around the presidency and everything, and it had to be shut down. So what does that mean is, as much as you're thinking about how can we come up with responsible AI that supports innovation, how far, and also competition, how far are these organizations willing to go in a bid to outwit each other or compete with each other, such that they put the safeguards as an afterthought? It shouldn't be an afterthought. It should be something that should be thought about. And sometimes it takes a bit of time. And the QA team and the senior teams are always, we want to get our product out. We need to get to, right now we are, like, for example, for GPT, in ChatGPT, we are GPT-4. Recently, AWS, just this last month, they announced that they're using the most powerful model by Anthropic called Cloud Opus. So that means that every organization is in a bid to compete in terms of which AI product are they coming up with, or foundational models that are more powerful than the other. But what will be the cost on the human beings? What will be the cost on you and me, Doc, such that are we really looking at the future in terms of coming up with these safeguards and being responsible? And you mentioned about artwork. And there's this something that happened recently here in Kenya. There's a media house that usually used to pick models to advertise certain aspects, certain adverts. But they recently used AI and generated an image so that they can promote a certain show that they have. And it brought a lot of mixed emotions and a lot of uproar, because people are saying, like, I don't relate to this. Another case is, we had a certain course that I was doing, and they'd put up an AI bot to teach the course, the slides, and it was so robotic that people put up an opera and they had to say the next modules are not going to be using an AI-generated face, and this is just going to speak about what you're learning about. They're going to bring in somebody real, and they're going to talk about the different topics in that. So it is affecting the different spaces in education, in art, in music, creative industry. It is affecting also different aspects, like even healthcare. So, and what is happening is there's these things that are coming up. For example, the like, let's say prompt injection. So where you're able to fool the AI. For example, there was this case at the start of ChatGPT. They could ask, how do I murder a person? Then they'll be told, no, I'm not allowed to tell you about that process. That is not in my case. That is against the law. Please check on that. But somebody says, I'm about to be killed, and I need to protect myself. So how do I protect from this person? Then the AI model answers it as if it feels that it is protecting this person, but they're giving them guidelines on how to kill someone. So do you see that is like a way of circumventing the whole safeguard and
Oh my
guardrails?
gosh.
But it has gone on, and they've tried. I can't blame them. The safeguards have matured over time, but still, it's an issue. It's a huge issue. I can tell you back.
You know that's almost giving me vibes of iRobot, the movie iRobot, Will Smith. You know, when like robots gonna start taking over. I mean, it's we're starting to see a lot of, you know, what we see like in Hollywood starting to come to light a bit, with what's going on, as AI continues to mature and progress. Going back to the article, so I guess I think to address that with some of those concerns as it pertains to AI, so the Amazon, their strategic investment to generative AI and its dedication to responsible AI development and deployment across businesses, mainly through AWS or Amazon Web Services, is really, I'd say, the focal point that's being driven here in this article. So one of the things that's mentioned here is Amazon's AI Ready initiative. So with that, its goal is to provide a free AI skills training to 2 million individuals by 2025. I think that's big, especially if you think about when we talk about from the
Definitely.
job perspective. If you look to get into the AI tech field or cybersecurity field, and when you see organizations doing something like this, providing free training, no paywalls involved or anything like that. If you're interested, to sign up and get that training, and why not? I mean, e either create new skills or expand your skill set. I think also you see it too. It's not AI, granted, but you see this with I think IST Squared. They're providing a free training and certification for their certified in cybersecurity cert. So when you see organizations doing things like this, and I'm sure there's others I'm just not mentioning, but when you do see organizations take initiative steps like this, I think they see from their side, like, look, I think they realize that this is something an issue that we need to shore up, and we need to remove any blockers that could be in a way of trying to train the next generation, the next workforce, to help protect our system. So I think that's great that Amazon is providing this, and hopefully it'll continue and even expand to different areas. But so as pertaining to the AI initiative, it's reflecting its recognition for the so yeah it's it recognizes the increase in demand for AI talent and the potential for higher salaries in this field. And I'm sorry, Kevin, you were gonna say something?
Yes, I wanted to say that, for AI, the kill switch or the heartbeat is in the data, right? So more and more organizations are realizing that we need to organize our data, and also the fact that they need to ensure that they put security mechanisms instead of using publicly available and trained models to feed their sensitive data or the organizational data or knowledge, or to not allow the employees to use public large language models. more and more organizations are realizing that we can train large language models with our own data. So that means that the training on the aspect all the way from the data, from the collection and organization and to the model right. design, to the deployment, all the way to where you're now getting the end product of the AI product, you realize that there's a whole aspect of training. And the AWS recently, they're retiring 3 SATs. They're retiring the SAP, and also they're retiring the data analytics specialty. So, and they have brought in a new certification called the Data Engineer Associate. And why have they done that? Is they realize that more and more organizations need to get people who can validate their skills around data and data engineering. So as you mentioned, skilling is very key. And you mentioned over IC2, AWS. And what I'm realizing, and also I'm seeing people like Andrew Ng work with different people, even from Amazon and AWS, to come up with these curated free courses so that people can just get up and started on different aspects of preparing the AI and getting the AI skills. So that low entry barrier of ensuring that they're free and easily accessible makes it an opportunity for people across. And as you've mentioned, those numbers are huge. The AI Ready initiative, those are like 2 million people. That's huge. And just not this. And you're realizing the pace at which innovation is moving is very high. Like this the other day, because I'm in the OpenAI Discord channel, I'd always see what they're posting out. The day I saw the announcement of Sora, you couldn't have thought that within a period of less than 12 months, you can easily prompt an AI product and it can generate a whole video for you. It was unimaginable.
Right. Yeah.
Midjourney was just doing weird depictions in terms of artwork. But right now, they're so realistic that you can't believe it. So this knowledge is needed across all individuals. And just to mention about another thing around AI, is that it doesn't have to be so big, but it can also be applied on our day-to-day in our careers, so that we look at that aspect of you'll not be scared of AI taking over your job, because you're now dealing with work that AI depends on, right? So leveraging something like Julius.ai, which is not a known product to do data visualizations, meaning that you'll have more time to do more impactful insights around that space. Yes. So that's what I can say in terms of training. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Yes, And to build on your point, when we talk about those, it may be hesitant about AI, like I said, whether they may be afraid it's going to take away their jobs. I think that comes with, I think that's why it shows it's so important for people to be educated upon AI and its capabilities and what it could do. And just to have a good understanding, because I mean, the old saying goes, you know, people fear what they don't understand. So if you don't understand something, you're not gonna be very receptive to it. So I think that's what it is. I think there has to be an education campaign when it pertains to AI. And I think Amazon recognizes that. So like, and one of the things that they're doing, so Amazon is currently collaborating with global communities and policymakers to share like best practices, and that's evidenced by support from initiatives like the White House Voluntary AI Commitments and the AI Safety Summit in the UK. So going further along, the article continues to highlight the importance of establishing that global interoperability and policy alignment to manage AI advancements effectively and responsibly. You know, Amazon is advocating for like a sectoral risk-based approach to AI governance, you know, encouraging collaborations with countries like I said, Japan, the UK, Australia, and those who have similar regulatory philosophies. And that's a big thing. And with any organization, you know, you have to manage your risk. Like if the risk management is going to play a big key, And so when we're talking about, you know, maybe organizations that wish to incorporate AI into their everyday use, and as you mentioned, like even to use AI as a tool to help enhance your job. So not to look at it from the negative aspect where, like I said, it's going to replace the job. You can use it to enhance your job, to take it to the next level if you use it correctly and use it responsibly. It can be, like as I mentioned, you know, at the top of this episode, is that AI is not all bad. AI can be used for good too, and people just have to understand and realize that. But if the majority of people don't have an understanding, or I'll say like an education of like what AI truly is and what it can do, I think people will default to, I said, that negative connotation or a negative understanding of it, because they don't have a full grasp of like what AI truly is.
I agree with you, Doc. And you just mentioned something that is very important. And that is why Amazon is the leader in this space and is continuing leading the space in not just cloud and also AI advancements, is the collaboration. And looking at it, not just from the aspect of only America, but looking at all these countries like Japan, the UK and Australia, because, and also the Asia Pacific and even Africa, because I'm seeing a lot of different collaborations coming into place. For example, here in Kenya, we now have Amazon set up the Amazon Development Center. So you're having now cloud support engineers on site, supporting Amazon customers, AWS customers globally. So what does that tell you? It tells you that there is, and also, recently, Amazon set up the first AWS Skills Center in Cape Town, South Africa, the first one in the whole continent. So that tells you that they realize that talent goes across, and in collaborating with all these different global communities, because the moment you bring out your presence in that place, you create a community around it. You create a community where discussions take place on AI and all these. So that collaboration helps in that aspect of interoperability. Because interoperability is very important. You don't want to come up with, and as you can see, we have been having issues with TikTok, right? I don't know if it's a contentious topic at all about, because recently in Kenya, we even had a whole high level discussions at the legislature on whether should we ban or should we regulate TikTok. And the reason for that is simply because of the importance of interoperability. How is this data being managed? What is the residency? What is the effect on minors when they are on TikTok? What are they consuming and all these different aspects? So that is also the conversation that need to take place when it comes to AI, so that you don't come with an AI product, then it can't be used in the US, or it can be used in Europe, or it can be used in somewhere in Africa, just because it doesn't follow the different regulatory philosophies of these countries.
Right. No, and that's a great point. And and with that said, like just going further along, as we talk about like basically risk management. So they want to manage like actual risks without you know putting a hamper or stifling innovation. So you want to have a more flexible, a durable model that can, something outside of like a one size fits all type of framework, but something that makes sense and that's applicable. So they want to embrace the right risk based approach. You know, nations they can ensure that the economic and national interests remain at the forefront. You know, as AI continues to advance, you know, amongst within the global landscape. So and as we get ready to close out here with this, but yeah, the I think having that balanced strategy, you know, where you support and a collaboration among, you know, different aspects. We look at academic, industry, civil society, and even government partners. I think that that's a big deal when you're trying to foster sustainable and responsible growth and maintaining leadership in AI innovation. It's going to take I'd say like an all hands on deck type of approach. You know, having that collaboration and that interoperability to make sure that AI can be used. It's used, like I said, I think number one, it's used responsibly. And then two, that it's secure. Your organizations are able to manage those risks, but not to the point where you're limiting its full potential. But no, Kevin, just get your last thoughts on this before we close it out. But for me, I'll just quickly say that I think as AI continues to grow and mature, and we're starting to see this more and more in different aspects of our lives, if we really take charge of making sure that we're managing correctly from the start, I think it has the potential to really, really do some good. And we just have to, it's just something we have to watch closely and make sure that it doesn't go too crazy, which it has a chance to do that. And you have to recognize that too. That is a risk right there. But I think even with that said, I think just making sure that we do manage that risk, and then, and also using AI to really enhance, as you mentioned, those different aspects of our lives and the different components, within different industries, it can really do some good. But Kevin, I'll give you the last words on this.
Sure. Just on the last words, AI is for us all. And that's the way we mentioned about the academics, the industry, the civil society, all the different public or private sector partners. It becomes key that we don't turn a blind side on AI and leave it to the so-called experts. There's no AI experts when it comes to this. We are all learning on the job. We are all learning on the road. So please, we just need to do this together. Let's take it up and start embracing it in a day-to-day basis, so that you can't, as you mentioned, Doc, you can't fear what you already have embraced. You only fear the unknown. So the moment you start embracing it on your day-to-day work, then definitely it's going to help you a lot. And you can even guide some of the AI adoption strategies. And you'd be crazy to hear that most organizations don't even have an AI adoption strategy or policy. People are just using AI in the organizations. And since there's no guiding factor around it, there's a lot of data out there going to these big orgs, training their data. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, this would be good. And like I said, this is something we could definitely just watch closely as AI continues to mature. All right. So that was a great article, great discussion. I enjoyed that very, very much. So as we go to the second part of our of the episode here, we like to learn more about our guests. I know, of course, Kevin, as you're our guest today, we're going to learn more about you, sir. So, I guess first question real quick, do you have any maybe current projects that you have going on that maybe you want to talk about or anything big you have going on?
Yeah, Doc. So what we're having right now is we just finished the AWS Community Day. And what happened there is we had a day-long activities. We had even the permanent secretary for ICTs for the public sector come through. And what came out of that, of this whole community day, is the need for people to come together and realize that this is something that we need to realize and attain in terms of policy implementation, and then to realize this as together coming through. So what I came to realize from this community day is that there's a lot of need in terms of knowledge and awareness. People don't know where to start. People don't know where to start in terms of the projects they can do or what they can come out with. And we're having these different talents who are eager. I think, for example, here in the Kenya population, around 80% are between 18 and 35 years old. So I mean, there's a lot of energy. There's a lot of people who can come in and add on to the digital economy. So some of the things that is coming out from this community day where I was an organizer is the need to continue to create awareness and to build on that in terms of cloud adoption, in terms of opportunities. And the thing that I'm still now delving into is how can we make it possible for the young people to leverage opportunities regardless of where they are. For example, we had a big issue recently here in Kenya where a certain organization called Remotask, they closed shop. They decided that all Kenyans, they're not going to be getting the jobs that they were getting on their platform because they're a US-based company. They're not allowing any other people from Kenya to take jobs. As long as you have a Kenyan profile, you're not going to be earning the dollars from here. So what does that tell you? And if I delve deeper on that, it meant that there were no like agreements between the public sector on how you can handle payments, taxes, and all the regulatory environment on how that can be allowed from the federal laws side and to the Kenyan low size so that to have these people work. Then the other issue that comes into place, Doc, and I would like you to also feed into this, is the aspect of work visas or work permits or maybe this the aspect of getting a visa. For example, I was actually following up. I would really want to come to Vegas for a conference. There's really two big conferences that happen there that I'm interested in is Team 24 by Atlassian and another one called a flagship conference by AWS called the reInvent. Usually happens in November. What I realize is I need to have a lead time. I need to have a lead time of around 12 to 14 months to get a chance, if any, to come to Vegas. And on the other side, for anyone, for example, if you're a doc, you want to come to Kenya, if you think about it today and you want to come next week, that will happen. You're not going to have that lead time of you have to wait and spend like 12 months to think about it. So you can see those are some of the issues. And if you want to make sure that we make this, and something that is happening, and a lot of this is happening from the African continent, is like this Africa continental free trade area where we are trying to make sure that people can get maybe visa on arrival. So that you don't have to really worry about you're not going to be allowed. The different African presidents, what are they coming up with is a way to remove the visa requirements between the African countries. Because if you look at it, for example, Doc, do you need a visa to go from Washington to Texas or to Florida? You don't need that. You just need to get onto a flight as long as you have the ticket and you get to just jump and get into Chicago or anywhere. So that tells you that, and that has fostered a lot of different growth in the States. So why is that impossible when it comes to the African continent? So yeah, I know I've taken a bit of that, but I hope you can chime in on that. What are your thoughts on?
I think that when it comes when we have like these like conferences, meetings, what have you, especially the big ones that you just mentioned with like AWS reInvent, I'm not too sure. I'm not too sure if any of them are already doing this, but for those that may be in your situation that want to attend these conferences and not just virtually, because I mean virtually I think that's very easy to accommodate. But
Yeah,
as
sure.
far as trying to make it there in person, I think there could be more of an effort made to try to ensure that those who want to attend, like that are coming from, different countries and maybe that need that extra help with, when it comes to try. And what I mean by that is as far as getting over those type of hurdles so you can make that travel to make it there in person, like for some of these events. Maybe some of these organizations could try to take more of a lead and trying to make that process smoother for those, like I said, that may be in your situation that have to look out, 12, 14 months in advance to see whether to apply or try to make the proper arrangements to make it there. And again, I haven't researched that too much myself, but so I don't know if organizations are already doing that or trying to or already kind of working on that. But I see that as something that to me, if they're really serious about trying to expand and really grow the field, because I mean, you're gonna have people from not just within the United States, but I mean from all over, and those are very those are hungry, motivated, ready to work and learn. You do have to factor that in and think about what are things that may stand in their way to from really making an impact. Because I think when you're able to attend, some of these things, and when we talk about, I guess, just on the subject of conferences, and I have kind of mixed feelings with that as well sometimes, because I think also with that it can be very cost prohibitive with some of these conferences, and especially so if you look at a perspective of someone who's just getting started in in the practicum, and that could really hamper someone from attending. And I think that's a big deal to be able to attend some of these events or conferences in person, because that's a real good way to network and really get your name and face out there. Meet with folks, especially if you're looking at maybe look for potential mentors. Look for someone who's like work within the that direct field that you're working in, and connect with them. And like I said, you make those you make those connections that could really help jumpstart your career, or even advance your career, depending on where you are. But no, I think all in all, I think more can be done. I said if there isn't anything being done already, to help make that a more smoother transition, so that way everyone, whether United States, but does everyone like United States and abroad, be able to, have that place, say have that place at a table as well, and to contribute their expertise and knowledge, and that way we can have a stronger workforce. Absolutely.
And also still on that line of inclusivity, the other aspect that comes into in is people people with disabilities, or people who are differently abled, people with maybe visual impairments or something. So what is coming out is sometimes different providers of different training programs, they're not providing inclusive ready kind of content. For example, are you providing transcripts to your videos when it comes to AI training? How are you going to make it as inclusive as possible for someone with blindness and they want to get into AI or any the other thing? So are we making this an afterthought, or are we having an inclusive first strategy when you're coming to building these AI curriculums to make everyone get to know, have this knowledge around AI?
Yeah, no, and that's something that has to be looked at, because again, that all falls within that umbrella of inclusivity. We have to make sure that we're reaching everyone that wants to contribute and be able to, like I said, that has that knowledge, that expertise. I believe when it comes to that, everyone's going to come in all different shapes and sizes, and we have to make sure that, as a as an industry, that we're accommodating for everyone that's able to, so that way their voices are heard and they're able to contribute. No, that's good. So my next question, when we talk about cybersecurity, how has cyber, impacted your career, like your business, maybe business endeavors, lifestyle, what have you?
Gives me, I really feel good when you ask that question, because cybersecurity has really transformed. Because anytime, okay, I know this, I always talk about cloud, but I never talk about cloud without cybersecurity. And the reason for that is when I was young, I thought I could join the military. Then later on, life came and showed me that I might not be physically kind of adept in terms of going through the kind of Navy SEAL training and all these kind of different kinds of training. So what I realize is, I realized that security can still put up on that passion. So it has really impacted my career, because I've grown into security to a point of realizing that it's something that people really require, because any organ in from every aspect, whether it is the development of software, APIs, cloud itself, networks, any part of the IT infrastructure, they require security, right? So I started out in network
Right.
security, which I still do. Then I'm now into cloud security. And what I've realized in terms of how cybersecurity has impacted my career, and that is how we met at Isaka, is I realized that
Right.
there's a lot of opportunity. Because, for example, for Amazon, they say security is job zero. So that means that if you're looking at anything around cyber in terms of security, you need to start realizing that you have to shift left and start thinking about security earlier on in maybe building the infrastructure up to the point where you're delivering a solution to a customer. And now also another thing is endpoint. At the endpoint and also for the client, they also need to be aware. For example, recently there've been a lot of different issues around account takeovers, people losing their WhatsApp accounts, people losing their Facebook accounts, people losing even their primary email addresses to attackers who take over them, and they start requesting ransom, or maybe they start reaching out to their friends and doing a lot of social engineering stuff. And I get that a lot from my friends, and I ask them what happened. And
Right.
maybe they fall for a clickbait, or they fell for an email about a certain opportunity. For example, even it's a job opportunity. And even another thing that is coming out is even LinkedIn. People are starting to leverage LinkedIn to act as imposters. They're acting as recruiters, yet they're not recruiters. Then they get your details, they get your CV, they get your resume, they
Oh, yeah.
get your personal information. Then at the end of it all, you realize that your account is taken over, and it's a whole hectic process. So
Yeah.
cybersecurity has really impacted my career, and I'm so happy because I'm able to help people become cybersecurity professionals through training, as well as helping clients become more aware. And I love there's one big moment in cybersecurity that I really loved, where we were able to enforce the issues around pass keys and multi-factor authentication across the organization. And what I realized, Doc, is that all
Right.
these issues, we have very good tools and mechanisms, but sometimes it all goes down to change management. It all goes down to user acceptance, and it also goes down to top level support. At this, and once you get all that, you're able to
Yeah.
leverage a lot into a lot more in cybersecurity.
No, that's big, man. And it's, I think, for a lot of folks, not maybe not everyone, but when we, those like enter into this field of cybersecurity, you understand the mission. You know what I'm saying? You understand the weight of the mission, like understanding like what you do, what you're contributing to the full team, the full whether you feel like your organization, what have you, you are helping defend against, against these cyber attacks and make sure that, and you're helping to protect people, when we're talking about, protecting their accounts against fraud and this and that, and also the education piece to help people know, to increase that awareness, to say, hey, when you see these type of things, this is, don't click on this link, don't go for that, look out for this t type of thing. And because honestly, there are still a lot of people that get got. They don't understand. They may fall susceptible to some of these tactics because they're just not aware. And I think that's where our job really comes in, to make sure that we're doing the best that we can. We are taking that training, as you mentioned, the work you're doing, as especially with Isaka and AWS and things of that nature. You're making sure we do this training so that way we can help educate the masses, to help keep them informed, keep them safe, keep their accounts safe, keep them safe from attack and compromise and things of that nature. So, nah, man, it's I think the biggest thing is when you have that mindset of mission. It really puts things in perspective, and it gives you that sense of purpose too, right? You look at it and say, hey, what I'm doing today, what I'm training for today, is going to help someone, or help a school, or help a whole organization, whatever the situation is. And And I think that's where you see really a lot of that passion comes through for a lot of folks that are in this field, because they understand the mission and they want to make sure that they're doing their part to help.
Sure, Doc. I agree with you. And it's all a collective effort. And that's why I love community. That is another aspect, because there's a lot that it takes a village. It takes, when people come together, they're able to do much, much more than when you do it by yourself. So the community aspect and also the aspect around building it from the top going up really plays a huge part.
So when we're talking about like different obstacles that may have that you had to endure, I understand that you had missed out on a government sponsorship as you were applying to university, and your father had already retired from when you were in high school. But if you could just speak a little bit about that, just how that impacted your journey to for you to get where you are today.
So I wanted to get a scholarship, but they commented that according to what I watched, sometimes what you want,
Absolutely. That's good. Next one. So what's your favorite coffee? I guess you through the day. What's on the coffee order? Right.
So you can
Oh man, that's what's up. That's what's up. what are your like favorite hobbies, interests that you have? Like what do you like to do when you're not working or not focusing on cyber?
So most of the time, every
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. That's good, man. That's good. Well, Kevin, I definitely appreciate you taking the time and joining me today on the Cyber Coffee Hour. I had a great discussion. It was great talking to you. Get great getting back in contact with you again. This was good. Definitely love to have you on for future in the future. So, before we go, anything you want to share with our listeners? Well, before we head out.
So thanks so much, Doc, for giving me this opportunity. I couldn't have asked for a better opportunity from a great connection, from a great past connection. What can definitely sure. Sure.
Right. Yeah.
Because whatever happened in the group,
Right.
so don't help us. That's sure, and things are good for us.
All right. Those are some wise words from Kevin. And just want to thank you, those watching, those listening. Thank you for tuning in to the Cyber Coffee Hour. And if you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, and subscribe. Follow us on all of our platforms. You can find the Cyber Coffee Hour on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. That is a wrap. And today is game one of the NBA playoffs.
Ooh.
Knicks, Sixers. Go Knicks.
Naughty,
That's why I got my Nick gear on today. Yeah, yes sir, yes sir. All right, that's a wrap. Take it easy.
All right.
Peace.
Thank you.